now come to order. Jessica, please call the roll.
Chair Gates?
Here.
Vice Chair Pion? Excuse. Representatives Bracey? Here. Clellan?
Here.
Eagle?
Here.
Grant? Harrell?
Here.
Hood?
Here.
Hudson?
Here.
Kerner?
Here.
McGee?
Here.
Democratic Ranking Member Schlossberg?
Here.
Representative Vincent?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Jess. Welcome, everyone, this morning. Today, we will be taking up the criminal gang prevention issue that was on our subcommittee's work plan. We also will have Representative Harrell, who's carrying a large portion of the DJJ package this year, and we'll have a number of member bills. We'll begin this morning with consideration of House Bill 489 by Representative Stone. Representative Stone, you're recognized to present your bill, and I understand that there's a strike all, so would you like to begin by presenting the strike all?
Hit the button. Yeah. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Gates and members of the committee. Yes, there is a strike all. The strike all amendment for House Bill 489 simply addresses a more appropriate part of the statute for the definition of railroad police officers.
Okay. Representative Stone, is that your explanation of the strike all, or do you have more to share with us?
That's really the explanation was that the original bill draft came out identifying a different Florida statute, and it was determined it was more appropriate to move it to a different statute.
Members, are there questions on the strike call? Is there public testimony? Seeing none, is there debate? Seeing none, is there any objection to Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 489? Seeing none, show the amendment adopted. We are now back on the bill as amended. Are there member questions on the bill as amended? Seeing none, is there public testimony? Jacqueline Litzinger from CSX, you are recognized. Waves in support. Thank you very much for being with us today. Seeing no further public testimony, is there debate on the bill as amended? Seeing none, Representative Stone, you are recognized to close.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to read the purpose of this legislation. It's offered to you today on behalf of the Freight Railroad Police Officers in Florida serving as commissioned police officers for Florida's Class 1 and Class 2 railroads. These freight railroads are CSX Transportation, Norfolk and Southern Rail Line, and Florida East Coast Railroad. This bill has been narrowly drawn to represent officers serving these classes of railroads. The bill does two things: certifies and brings railroad police officers under the administrative and disciplinary oversight of the Criminal Justice Standards and Training Commission, provides enhanced protection for railroad police officers who are the victim of an assault or battery while performing their duties. To provide you with some background, freight railroad police officers currently work throughout the state of Florida as duly sworn officers on railroad property with full arrest powers. Their mission is to protect the railroad environment, employees, and general public against the threat of terrorism and other criminal activity. Rail police currently meet or exceed all requirements for state certification as law enforcement officers. The officers are currently appointed as special officers under Florida Statute 354 by order of the governor. The affected railroads noted in this proposal are supportive of placing these and future officers under the administrative and disciplinary oversight of the Criminal Justice Standards and Training Commission. There is no physical impact to this bill because there is no additional cost to the state of Florida. The railroads represented in this legislation will assume all administrative costs associated with certification oversight, record maintenance, and coursework completion incurred by their officers. Let me be clear. This bill is not an attempt to privatize law enforcement. This legislation simply established uniform certification of all rail police officers and places officers under the professional oversight and jurisdiction of Criminal Justice Standards and Training Commission, known as the CJSTC. This legislative change would provide for standards of and Training Commission oversight with respect to training and discipline. This legislation ensures a commitment to the professionalism and excellence in policing.
Representative Stone having closed, Jess, please call the roll.
Representatives Gracie?
Yes.
Claren?
Yes.
Eagle?
Yes.
Grant? Carroll?
Yes.
Hood?
Yes.
Hudson?
Yes.
Turner?
Yes.
McGee?
Yes.
Schlossberg?
Yes.
Van Zandt?
Yes.
Vice Chair Pion? Chair Gates?
Yes.
11 yeas, 0 nays.
Show House Bill 49, report favorably. Congratulations, Representative Stone.
Chairman and committee.
Next up for consideration by the subcommittee will be House Bill 407 by Representative Ingram. Representative Ingram, the honorary member of the Criminal Justice Subcommittee, welcome, and you're recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, if you run enough bills through a single committee, you get that title, right? Good morning, members. Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Pilon, I guess, not here, and Ranking Member Schlossberg, good to see you all this morning. And Mr. Chairman, thank you for your support of this concept and this bill and recognizing the problem and allowing me to present this today. And I think a lot of the members were here, some were here last session when this bill came through, and thank you for your support from last session and now again. This bill was sort of was born out of the frustration of every morning waking up and seeing violent acts in the newspaper repeatedly every morning. It's something that's become alarmingly regular at home. I imagine that a lot of you are dealing with the same things in your districts. I'll try to make this as brief as possible and also inform you as to the content of the bill. I'll use a lot of examples of what we're dealing with at home in Escambia County, but again, I think it applies statewide, and I think a lot of you are dealing with it, and I think this addresses some problems that we have. The overwhelmingly negative and tragic effects of gang violence is the human element. You know, the kids that witness drug deals going down, that are recruited into the gangs to commit the acts themselves, the women caught in the prostitution rings, the victims of murder. I mean, that's the overwhelmingly horrible effect of gang and gang violence. There's also the tertiary effect of, would you want to locate your business in a town or in a state where this is a constant problem? You know, when you open the newspaper, there's been a murder or a violent act. I don't think you would. And so there's the human tragedy, and then also the economic impact that hits the state as well. That's not good for any of us. Of course, that affects everything from healthcare to education when no one's paying into the tax base. And so as I saw these acts committed every day, I started to ask law enforcement and ask the state attorney at home, and then have conversations with folks here in Tallahassee about how did this start to happen. Like, 10 years ago, I just didn't see it like I do now. And the answer was a little surprising that it's, first of all, about 80% of the crimes that we see, after having talked to law enforcement and prosecutors at home, about 80% of the violent crimes that we see are gang-related. And they're not the traditional gangs that we've always seen, the Bloods, Crips, or even gangs organized like the Mafia that we could go after using RICO statutes. They're hybrid gangs or neighborhood gangs, which is an entirely different animal that we may not have been prepared to go after. And so that's what makes this problem a little different and different than what we've seen in the past. So sort of the attempt of this bill is to there was a stakeholders meeting in Pensacola, in your districts probably as well, where DJJ was there, representatives from the Department of Education and others, and the statement was made, if you can get a kid to 13 years old and he hasn't joined a gang, then your chances of that kid not getting involved in gang violence are significantly increased. And so that in essence is the attempt of this bill is to increase penalties for people who try to recruit kids into gangs, keep gang members away from schools, and get kids to that critical age, of 13 years old, not having gotten involved in something like this. And so that's the attempt of this bill. I think it will be effective. It passed the House last year overwhelmingly, and I think has a great chance of passing the Senate this year. Our former colleague in the House, Senator Abruzzo, is going to carry the bill in the Senate, so I think we have a great chance to pass there as well. And so I would ask for your support. I think it's an important step for the safety of children in the state and all of our safety and our constituents. So anyway, I'd ask for your support. I thank you and look forward to hearing any questions or concerns you may have.
Members, are there questions on the bill? Questions on the bill. Representative Ingram, first of all, thank you for taking this assignment. As you know, this is an important issue to our subcommittee. We've added it to our work plan and something we're going to watch. Could you speak a little bit to the specific issue of gang recruitment? It's one of the things that's most troubling to me. When I was a mentor at a middle school, and you'd see the kids being let out of school, and right on the other side of the school boundary, you had these folks that were just waiting to get those kids and get them out there slinging dope. So how do we address that in the
bill? Absolutely. And thank you, Chairman. You could probably actually physically see it. If you went to certain schools, you could see the gang members right outside of the schools waiting to entice children, however they might do it, and encourage them to join a gang. And the draw for the gang and the reason they want children in is because children can be mules or runners or do whatever they would like, carry out violent acts, and if a kid is picked up, they're significantly less likely to be prosecuted like an adult. Or, you know, even if they are prosecuted, it's going to be significantly less of a penalty for that child. And so there's an obvious positive for a gang to have kids involved, and the effect to the child and to families is awful. And so that's why we want to shore up that 500-foot zone around schools and make sure that gang members stay out.
We'll now move into public testimony on the bill. Aaron Daly from the Florida Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs. Thank you very much, and for all that your organization does. We're now in debate, members. Is there a debate? Representative Hill recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say thank you so much, Representative Ingram, for doing this very good bill. This was a major issue before this committee last year, and this is a very, very important bill. I know in our home community we have a significant problem, especially in the Fort Pierce area with gangs in Port St. Lucie. We need to make sure we have activities such as the Boys and Girls Club to keep kids busy and involved as well. So it's a combination of tactics we have to use to really make sure these kids stay on the right path. But this is a very important bill, and thank you so very much for doing it. And I'm sure this will pass unanimously all the way through the House, and let's hope we get it through the Senate this year.
Further debate. Further debate. Representative Van Zandt, recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments. Representative Ingram, thank you for handling this. I would encourage the 13 number of the age of the recruited person to be moved to less than 18, simply because at 18 they're adults automatically. The gang recruitment that I've experienced doesn't stop at 13, although 13 is the I guess you could say the target zone, but they keep recruiting, and a child that's been 13 or less that somehow gets free of that recruitment and moves in that upper age zone, if they think they can get him, they will. And so since he's still a juvenile, less than 18 years old, I would just encourage you, as the bill moves forward, you might consider moving that number to less than 18 or through 17 or something of that nature. Secondly, I want to commend you because the increase in the degree of punishment will move these gang members that are convicted to prison instead of jails. As most of our sheriffs will tell you and most of our police chiefs, the local jails are full, and they pretty much stay full around Florida. And we're having some success in emptying some prison beds, and these are the guys that those beds belong to. So thank you, Representative Ingram. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Van Zandt. Further debate? Further debate? Seeing none, Representative Ingram, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to do this quickly. I want to point out a couple of things. This is a continuing effort. I think Florida's been forward-thinking and aggressive in going after gangs. There was a 2008 package. I know a lot of the staff here probably worked very hard on that package. And so this is a continuation of work that's already been done. I wanted to make sure that was mentioned. Representative Van Zandt had some fantastic ideas that I think I'd like to, whether it would be incorporated into this bill later or be the subject of a different bill later on. I think I just want to say thank you for your input and address specifically that magic age of 13 was, came out of conversations where that was sort of the magic age that, through studies, folks in education and juvenile justice have seen. If we can get a kid to that age, then they're able to stand on their own a little more than they would have. That the naivete is a little dwindled down by then, and they're able to make their own decisions. The same tenets of this bill would be in effect, and I think help the 18 and under, and I'll take that under consideration and certainly look at it. And members, thank you. I got to talk to some of you, not all, beforehand. Representative Bracey, thank you, and I know you have some concerns. I'll work with you, and I just want to say thank you for hearing me out. And with that, I ask for your support, and I appreciate it in advance. That's it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Jessica, please call the roll on House Bill 407.
Representative Bracey?
Yes.
McClellan?
Yes.
Eagle?
Yes.
Brandt?
Yes.
Farrell?
Yes.
Hood?
Yes.
Hudson?
Yes.
Kerner?
Yes.
McGee?
Yes.
Slosberg?
Yes.
Van Zandt?
Yes.
Vice Chair Pelon? Chair Gates?
Yes.
Bill FIA, zero news.
Congratulations, Representative Ingram.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, all members.
And members, that's now the second bill of our work plan that we've moved out of the subcommittee, and so I just encourage you, if these bills are of interest to you and you support them, to give them every consideration for co-sponsorship, because that will ensure that this bill, 407, and also Representative Kerner's bill, 7005, continue to move through the process. Members, before we take up... Oh, he just left. There he is. Before we take up our next bill, I want to recognize one of our former colleagues now, serves on the bench, Judge Nick Thompson. Judge, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And Judge Thompson left a great legacy in the House, but he also left a television when he departed that I have in my office. So if you'd like to visit your TV... Very well. I'm sure I didn't follow whatever protocols were necessary before converting it to my uses, but if you'd like to visit it, it's in my office. Thank you, Judge Thompson. Next up for consideration will be House Bill 399 by Representative Eagle. Representative Eagle, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, fellow members. I'm pleased to present House Bill 399 relating to mutual aid agreements involving Florida College System police officers. HB 399 was brought forward by Edison State College in Southwest Florida with the sole intention to enhance public safety on and around our state's public colleges. In 2009, the legislature approved several changes to the mutual aid agreement statute to specifically clarify the state university law enforcement officials are authorized to enter into mutual aid agreements with local law enforcement agencies. This bill simply expands that statute to include our state college system.
There is an amendment. Representative Eagle, you are recognized to explain amendment number one.
Yes, sir. The amendment was suggested by committee staff to ensure the language used in the bill to refer to the Florida College System police officers is consistent with the verbiage used in current laws, purely technical.
Are there questions on amendment one? Public testimony. Debate? Any opposed to Amendment 1? Seeing none, show Amendment 1 is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, are there questions on the bill as amended? Seeing none, is there public testimony? Electro Bustle. Rick Parfit? No? Yes, you're recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's just my purpose here to explain just briefly how this is beneficial to the law enforcement on Florida community colleges and state colleges. Even though it only affects particularly four of us right now, this legislation will impact and affect our relationships with the sheriff's departments, which we deal with in the Fort Myers and Southwest Florida area. And we'll give our folks a little more leeway in responding to emergency calls or situations involving our students that are on contiguous properties around campus.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. Next up is Matthew Holliday. Thank you. And that's on behalf of Edison State College. Next up, Brian Pitts. Mr. Pitts waves in support. Is there a debate on House Bill 399? Seeing none. Representative Neal, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to include that this mandate on local agencies to enter into a mutual aid agreement is not a mandate, excuse me. It just gives the local agencies clear authority to do so. And I want to thank Mr. Pitts for his support. Your reputation is well-respected in the House, and it means a lot to me.
Jessica, please call the roll on House Bill 399.
Representative Springsteen?
Yes.
Clarin?
Yes.
Eagle?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Harrell?
Yes.
Hood?
Yes.
Hudson?
Yes.
Kerner?
Yes.
McGee?
Yes.
Losberg?
Yes.
Vincent?
Yes.
Vice Chair Pion? Chair Gates?
Yes.
12 yeas, 0 nays.
Congratulations, Representative Eagle. Show the bill reported favorably. Next up will be House Bill 4019 by our very own Representative Hill. Representative Hill, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an amendment. House Bill, these are two repealers that are being put together. This is the first one deals with Statute 985, and it removes obsolete language on the youth custody officers, which were eliminated from the budget in 2010, and the positions, the duties of these youth custody officers were distributed among various employees and are no longer used by the department, and the bill has no fiscal impact. I do have an amendment.
You are recognized to explain Amendment Number 1.
Yes. Amendment Number 1 also repeals Florida Statute 945.75, and this that statute actually permitted the judge to order a juvenile to tour a correctional facility or a county jail. However, because the Federal Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act prevents that from happening, DJJ would lose two-thirds of its federal funding if the statute is not repealed. So it's important that we do this one as well.
Are there questions, members, on Amendment Number 1? Everyone recognizes that Amendment 1 gets rid of scared straight in Florida, thanks to the wisdom of the federal government. I know Representative Van Zandt has scared me straight many times. Do you have any questions, Representative Van Zandt?
No, Mr. Chair.
No questions from Representative Van Zandt. Is there any public testimony on Amendment Number 1? Seeing none, any debate? Seeing none, is there any objection to Amendment Number 1? Seeing none, show Amendment Number 1 adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Members, are there any questions? Seeing none, is there public testimony? There is. Anna Sanchez from DJJ. Thank you, Ms. Sanchez. Next up, Brian Pitts.
Thank you very much. Beyond Scared Straight comes on A&E a lot. And I understand the Fed, but you see, we're doing it because of funding. So you don't think this is worth fighting for the kids? This may be, could be argued in court. Well, you know, you use the fund for right now, but to be quite honest, the program has not been used very heavily anyway. You've seen success just to the A&E program. It obviously can work, and they need to examine it. But to just get rid of it, and just like they were out of the funding, and that's the key change, what are y'all doing with that in the ACA? What, you know, you shouldn't have challenged the ACA. This is something to challenge right here, because it's a life for our kids. So, you know, obviously we'll repeal it because of funding. Well, no, why, no, I'll keep it like it is. You need to challenge the feds. I mean, get with your Congress, get with your district congressional system, you need to change this back. Or, you can trump the Fed if there's a state interest so extreme that it trumps what Fed would want to do. Now, that challenge many states have not done, because they go back in the day during the Confederate days when, you know, the U.S. think they could be, you know, those days when it was going between the South, the battle and all that, between whether the states could get out of the Union and all. It would be something like that. Well, again, that still can be used by states if they have. Now, on this particular issue, I would challenge them. So I understand, well, you know, we can't do anything about federal. Well, actually, you can do something. And not aspect of the funding, the essence is, it's our kids. Are you willing to do a fight for the kids to keep them on this Scared Straight program and use it? And we know that it works from, I'll say it again, the A&E series. Or, well, just for funding purposes, get rid of it. Bump the kids, you know, we need the money somewhere else. No, we need to fight sometimes for the kids, even if it's fair. The ACA wasn't worth a fight, but this one is. So, you know, I'll leave it there, and you need to talk to Congress. I understand your point, but I think you need to fight for that.
Members, we're now in debate. Seeing none, Representative Hill, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd just like to address one particular thing that Mr. Pitts did bring up. The result of not repealing this legislation would result in two-thirds of the funding that we receive from the federal government being removed. And this funding is used really for community-based prevention programs. And there are other ways to do prevention other than the Scared Straight program. process. So I would hate to see us lose things such as SINS FINS and many of the prevention programs that we have in our communities. So I would ask for your support of repealing both of these statutes.
Representative Harrell, having closed, Jessica, please call the roll on House Bill 4019.
Representatives Bracey?
Yes.
Clarin?
Yes.
Eagle?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Harrell?
Yes.
Hood?
Yes.
Hudson?
Yes.
Kerner?
Yes.
McGee?
Yes.
Schlossberg?
Yes.
Manzan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bielan? Chair Gates?
Yes.
12 A-0 News.
Show the bill reported favorably, and we will stay with Representative Harrell for House Bill 353. Representative Harrell, you're recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you very much, and this again is part of the DJJ package in order to really bring our statutes up to date. And I do have a strike all, Mr. Chair, so what I'd like to do is explain the strike all.
You're recognized to explain the strike all.
Thank you very much. And this bill creates similar statutes to what we have in our Department of Corrections statutes that really protect those in custody from inhumane treatment of youth who are in custody of DJJ. Previously, Section 827.03 dealing with child abuse was used, but really as we move forward, we wanted to make sure that there were statutes in place to give youth offenders who are in custody protections that are similar to those dealt with used in the Department of Corrections. And it prevents inhumane treatment, cruel or unusual treatment of youth in the custody of DJJ.
Are there questions, members? Public testimony on the strike all? Anna Sanchez from DJJ. Brian Pitts, Justice to Jesus.
Thank you very much, Brian Pitts, Justice to Jesus. You know, I love you, believe me, I do. I'm just bringing to your attention some things. We're not against the sponsor because there's a second bill here. Well, the staff analysis writes on page 2, while uncommon, there are instances in which a DJJ employee actions go beyond the scope of PAR, which of course that's the internal process they have for issues like this, or are not contemplated by the PA, the PAR. Now, staff makes very clear, giving indication of, do you really need to do this right now for the department? Now, we know some final time, things get on the news, and you know, the Martin Lee Anderson, and then other times, you know, when we had the Dozier School stuff, and final time, you know, things like that happen because human beings make mistakes. And again, I'm not trying to protect, again, public employees, but it's a balancing act here. Is it? Need or not? I'm saying, you know, DOC, that's nice. But are you going to do it just because DOC got it? Using for a criminal law, you're making it for a reason. So the next aspect comes up is, what is the reason to do this bill proactively or reactively? Again, I heard the sponsor, well, DOC has similar. That's not proactive or reactive. It's just because another department has something similar. Does DOJ have such great problems without the PAR? The PAR doesn't go far enough to where this bill needs to be done. Anything come up lately in the news about DJJ, something happened in institution facilities, something like that. You know, some giving you some kind of at least reason we need to correct. Read the language. You got some deep language here. A report, if they compromise a report, then it deals with inhumane behavior, then it deals with neglect, abuse. It so deals with several different aspects. I mean, it's a catch-22. So this officer better watch it. This employee better watch it very much. So much that they may not want to conduct their duty after seeing this statute. I mean, they doesn't give them even a mistake or out of, you know, I'm having a bad day, it was a mistake, can you just discipline me on this? You know, I don't think it's bad. This will not, I'm not talking about at the expense of kids, they should get away with murder. Or, you know, lack of discipline. Some employees have bad days. Look at the language in this strike all. I'll be very honest, if I walked into work as one of these officers or employees and I saw this language, I may want to think maybe I want a new job. I mean, I understand you want to take care of things, but these kids do so whacked out stuff too. And you're putting me on the line like, okay, I think I see enough on that. So out of nowhere, you're going to make a new statute with at least some no empirical evidence showing that there is a severe need.
So with that, you know, I'm not trying to stand up for the employees, but let's do a balancing act here between employees and kids that do some whacked out stuff. They intimidate employees to do something like this language should do. You don't say, well, you shouldn't be in the business. No. Kids, being around them 8-6 hours, whether it's in facilities or in detention complexes, these kids know how to do stuff that will, coerce an officer to do these very acts. So it's not the same as DOC. Those are adults. Kids is something else. And then they have this extra precaution where I better watch it because I knew that new law was made. So I got to watch the Black Humane. Also, I got to watch, I can't compromise the report. Not that I'm trying to, but I got to make sure I don't leave anything out of this report. Now, yeah, if I get somebody else to do it, let them believe that I'm me. We think of kids here. Now, say the kid know this law. You play that officer, that employee. It's unnerved, but so much they can do to me because this new criminal law that they passed. Let me see, I probably can work around this, and I know if I do this, they probably ain't going to pursue me or detain me or whatever because this hardline statute. In other words, you know what I'm saying? A kid does things differently to an officer versus what an adult would in DOC. It's not the same. You need to get the focus here. So with that, you know, I'm not trying to protect the police, but let's be balanced here. Now, you want to make a criminal statute, I say again, your guidelines is 7, Florida Statute 775.012. If you look at that, you know, this statute here, you add all these new criminal components, that's the standard general purpose for the code. I'm telling you, you may be putting these officers on the line too far. I understand some protection for the kids, but again, these kids do some whack stuff in these facilities. I mean, just imagine a kid using this to their benefit.
There's a round of debate on the strike call amendment. Is there debate? I'll say this. I had some concerns about the original portion of the bill that have been changed in the strike call. Representative Cleland, I wanted to thank you for your assistance. You're recognized if you'd like to share with us your thought process as you reviewed the bill and then contributed with me and with our staff to ensure that the strike call was fair, particularly to those who work in our correction system.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too had concerns, as you know, about the bill in its original form, but I think the strike call sort of clears up any concerns that I had. I represent corrections officers in my law practice, and these are terribly, terribly stressful jobs. And with the added pressure of putting the corrections officer under a child abuse statute was concerning to me. But I appreciate the strike call amendment, and I think that I will vote favorably in this circumstance. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Cullen, and it gives me great comfort to pass the bill knowing that Representative Cullen, who has practical experience in the area, has given it a thorough vetting. Is there further debate on the strike call amendment? Seeing none, is there any objection to the strike call amendment? Seeing none, should the strike call adopted, members, we're back on questions on the bill as amended. Are there questions? Public testimony on the bill as amended. Seeing none, is there debate on the bill as amended? Seeing none, Representative Harrell, you are recognized to close on the bill as amended.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate your comments on the strike call. I think it really addresses some of the issues. When we first looked at this and we were just changing how we use the child abuse statutes, there were problems with that, and we recognized that. I want to bring to the members' attention that the reason that well, the child abuse statutes only go to children under 18. Many of the youth in our correctional facilities are there until the age of 20 or 21, and they fell through the cracks there, and they did not have any protections there. I think when you look at the bill is crafted, it's a balancing act of protecting the youth who are in the facilities, but also protecting and making sure that the corrections officers have the ability to do what they need to do. And yes, there are some whacked out kids there. I will agree with you, Mr. Pitts. There are some whacked out kids. But also we want to make sure that we are not abusing those youth who are in our care and custody and making sure we can put them on the right track. I think this type of statute has been well vetted throughout the Department of Corrections, and you have some very, very whacked out and dangerous people in the Department of Corrections as well, perhaps even more so than in DJJ facilities. So we have reached that balance, I feel, within this bill, and I was with that I would ask for your favorable support.
Thank you, Representative Hill. We've definitely crossed the threshold of the number of times whacked out has been referenced in a subcommittee of the House. Jessica, please call the roll on House Bill 353.
Representative Spracey?
Yes.
Byron?
Yes.
Eagle?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Harrell?
Yes.
Hood?
Yes.
Hudson? Kerner?
Yes.
McGee?
Yes.
Slosberg?
Yes.
Vincent?
Yes.
Vice Chair Pihon? Chair Gates?
Yes.
11 yeas, 0 nays.
Show the bill reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Harrell. And for those of the new members of the House that are serving, it is a big undertaking to take on an agency bill. There's a number of stakeholders and always a lot of negotiating and back and forth, and we're very grateful that Representative Harrell has taken on the task of the DJJ agency bill. The final bill for consideration will be House Bill 361 by our own Representative Kerner. Representative Kerner, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It is your pleasure. There's a strike call, Member Representative Kerner. Would you like to begin by explaining the strike call?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chair, and Ranking Member Slosberg, and the rest of the members on the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to present House Bill 361. I'll talk to the strike call amendment very briefly. The strike call amendment addresses certain key issues. First and foremost, it eliminates the public records exemption that was previously within the bill. It adds definitions. Most relevant is the definition of a criminal justice commission. It narrows the exemption to apply only to public meetings and only when discussing active criminal intelligence or active criminal investigations. And it applies to all members. In the bill, unamended, it only applied to the sheriff, state attorney, chief judge, the chief of police, and some other public officials. So what we've done by the through the amendment is to narrow the scope of this exemption and define certain key terms.
Representative Kerner, having explained the bill, or the strike call amendment, pardon me, are there questions on the strike call? Seeing none, we're now in public testimony on the strike call. First up is Chris Schoonover. Next up is Brian Pitts.
Thank you very much, Brian Pitts, Justice Jesus, on the issue. Well, I was trying to see what you were trying to fix here, okay, and I'm just weighing in what your staff did here. I mean, staff almost made it clear that it was no need for the bill. Only two exist. Footnote 15. One, 2004, another in 2088. Now, here's the point. That means they've been having meetings already since that time. What changed that now they need an exemption for anything? What's being compromised? If it's been going since 2004, since 1988, what's your exemption for? You better give me a good reason, because obviously your meeting's been going on pretty well, and there's nothing being compromised or confidential. So what's your, this 2013. Let's see, 2004, 2013, that's almost 10 years. Then 1988, that's over 10 years. So, what's going on? In other words, they didn't plot for this, you know, 1990 maybe, or 2006, when it... No, so, looks like you're fine, so what's the need? What's changed? What's being compromised? Also, staff, again, is not needed, because it's already in law somewhere else. Footnote 8 through 14, 20 through 22. Mentions other statutory references where they're already protected for the very things in the bill already that can keep the meeting closed. Already is the statute. Staff analysis brings up. Again, so now again, what's the need for the bill again today? Finally, if that's the issue, most counties have a public safety coordinating council that deal with kind of those same kind of things, or a local offender council, or a juvenile justice council, or... In other words, what these two commissions do already exists sporadically in other statutes where these same entities talk about the same things. They must have a public meeting. They have records. And these same entities, local offender council, juvenile justice council, public safety coordinating council, these are different ones that's already a statute that you allow counties to make up and do, which is these two commissions. Now, again, it's only two. It's only two. So these two are coming to this large institution for this exemption bill. G still only. But no.
at this point, based on staff analysis alone, is no need for it. They already have what they can do, what they can close, and what cannot be closed. And besides that, they've been doing it ever since the failure exception, 2004 to 1988. They have not mentioned what has changed when you need a special bill just for these two. And you're already protected under law. I can't figure out what's going on here. Not only that, if the safety coordinating councils are not compromised, juvenile justice councils are not compromised, and you know, local offender advisory boards councils are not compromised, and all three of these do the same thing, I don't know.
Members are now in debate on the strike all amendment. Is there debate? Is there objection? Seeing none, shall the strike all amendment adopted. We're back on questions on the bill as amended. Are there questions? Seeing none, is there debate on the bill as amended? Seeing none, Representative Kerner, having waived close on the bill, Jessica, please call the roll.
Representatives Bracey?
Yes.
Clarin?
Yes.
Eagle?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Carroll?
Yes.
Hood?
Yes.
Hudson? Kerner?
Yes.
McGee?
Yes.
Losberg?
Yes.
Vincent?
Yes.
Vice Chair Pion? Trey Gates?
Yes. Show the bill report favorably. Congratulations, Representative Kerner. And members, this is a first for the Criminal Justice Subcommittee. We have ended early. Usually we are fighting the wire. Know that the preview of coming attractions is that next week we'll be dealing with two issues on our work plan, sex offender legislation, which will be led by Representative Harrell, and we'll also deal with the issue of habitual prison reoffenders, and Representative Eagle will be taking the lead on that. Seeing no other business before the committee, Representative Bracey moves to rise.